Welcome to your Sound Behavior Podcast, all about the stories of how celebrities are born and the journeys of everyday people. Sponsored by Perfection.us and Global Behavior. Now, here is your host, Don Crosby.
Hey, welcome to episode 32. I want to thank you for joining us today on Sound Behavior. And every week I have a special guest. But folks, today is, without exception, probably one of the coolest guys you're going to meet and hear. And his name is John Alden. He's a stuntman. He was a double with Harrison Ford. He's been on 150 movies plus. Just an exciting man. And John, I want to thank you, for making the time for me today. It's just a privilege to have you on. So, with Sound Behavior, John, what I like to do is just simply talk about stories, because stories are a great motivator, because we all have one, and we naturally compare ourselves among ourselves, and typically we look at people in the spotlight. And we look at them and we go, gosh, I'd like to be like him or her. And John, you're one of those guys. You've actually walked it. You've been in it. Gosh, what's it like?
Well, for me, gravitating to the film business was pretty simple. Never thought about it until one day when I used to work at Factory Yamaha in Southern California, and we used to help a lot of stunt people get bikes. And after meeting some very famous ones, I asked one of the stuntmen, whose name was Michael Runyard. He was an ex-Factory Suzuki racer who lived over in my area of the San Gabriel Valley of Southern California, if he would help me. And I knew nothing, Don, about the business. And he said the wrong three-letter word: yes. And so I literally was already leaving Yamaha because they let my boss go. And I started on a journey in mid-84 and worked until August of 2008 when I did my last stunt. It was a car chase on a show called Numbers.
Love Numbers.
Step away from the business. Yeah. But the film business for me was really simple because of my father's death. When I was so young, that part of my brain, one of the coping mechanisms, was I had no fear of getting hurt.
Wow.
I had no fear of injuring myself. That just didn't exist in my body. And I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing. It's just what had happened to my body and how I dealt with the trauma of my dad's suicide.
Wow. And how old were you, John, when you went through that?
I was nine years old, 6 days after my ninth birthday. My dad came up behind me and said something, walked outside. I watched him walk outside. He shuts the garage door and he hung himself.
Oh, my Lord.
So, back in my day, they didn't know what to do with anything.
Right.
So I saw my dad, like I said, I saw him walk out, and the next thing I know, my brother-in-law's coming over because my dad worked for him. My brother-in-law owned a lot of liquor stores, and they pushed me into the bedroom, and the next thing I see is the fire trucks and my dad on the stretcher, and then the next thing I see him was at the funeral. And, that was how it was. And I actually have no recollection of my childhood other than that. I don't remember hardly one or two things that happened in my whole childhood. God kind of removed all that stuff.
Wow. That's a compelling story, and it's something that makes an indentation in one's life forever. It's a footprint.
It does. It I tell people, because I speak a lot, or used to, when the PTSD doesn't get in the way, or when the children aren't having me dragging across the country racing. The thing I can say, even with Jesus, that suicide changes your life forever. There's nothing you can do about what happens internally because of what goes on. And it's the most selfish act someone can do, self-murder. People try to say, well, you're not going to go to heaven. Well, I don't look at suicide any differently than someone having a brain cancer or a sickness. It's a disease, and unfortunately the person believed the lie instead of the truth.
Incredible. Yeah. So you went from your love for motorcycles, adrenaline rush of being able to ride a bike. I understand. I mean, I've been watching you on YouTube, and you ride a real nice bike. Hey, when I was a kid, I got to share something with you. When I was a kid, I always wanted to ride a dirt bike. Lived on a farm, and as close as I got was a close as I got there was a Cushman scooter. My dad, and my dad would not allow me to have a dirt bike, and because I don't think he would trust me with it. So you know, you were blessed because you had that opportunity. But
the funny thing was, my dad told my mom, I guess, before he died, that don't ever let my son on a motorcycle. And the thing that put me into the film business was I wasn't a great pro. I'd only rode in 5 expert races, but I was proficient on a motorcycle. The thing that got me into the film business was my expertise on a motorcycle.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Kind of apropos.
Now, the other thing that got I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. If I lived on a farm, heck, I'd have been the next Jeremy McGrath or Ricky Carmichael. Those are two legendary names, but I lived in beautiful Southern California. It was hard enough to get to the races, but anyway, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was going to say, along with your skills of riding a bike, you know, you were blessed with good looks. I mean, to you know, be in movies with Harrison Ford and be his stunt double. I mean, you know, just the average guy off the street, John, is not gonna qualify for that. How was it working with Harrison Ford? Because that has to be a question that people would ask you frequently.
Well, you know what's funny? Harrison is actually a good old boy. He's really down to earth, a very good person to work for. First worked for him on Clear and Present Danger, and he is very cognizant of the crew. He likes to have lunch with the crew and stuff. You know, an ex-carpenter and so forth. But, you know, I was blessed. You know, my journey into Harrison wasn't just real simple because I had walked away from the film business for 18 months to try to take care of the pain in my heart over my dad's death. And I did nothing but cocaine for almost 18 months trying to actually probably try to kill myself.
Wow.
And so I had walked away from the business. And then I took a year to get sober when I had my encounter with with Jesus in the hotel room. But it all leads to this. I was back looking for work after being out almost a year and a half, probably almost 2.5 years. And the phone call rang one day, and they said, we want you to come for an interview for Harrison Ford. And the irony and the cute thing was, is the small thing was, the gentleman who was directing the second unit, which is the action unit on Clear and Present Danger, was David Ellis. David Ellis was the gentleman who gave me my very first stunt job way back in 1984. Yeah, that's how small the world is. He was also good friends with the guy that helped me get in the business, Mike Record. So
divine appointment.
It just kind of evolved. But I was blessed. You know, I did 4 shows with Harrison in 5 years. We never had a harsh word. I wish we could say that between some jealous people in the film business that can't stand people that succeed. But him and I had a great run from 93 to 98. I didn't see him again until 2007 at the Tour Stunts Awards, where he tackled me, and I haven't seen him since, you know. But I've been blessed. I doubled Burt Reynolds, Tommy Lee Jones. I doubled Mark Harmon. I doubled Dylan McDermott and a gentleman named Andy Devoff, who then became a good friend of mine. But I've been fortunate, you know. Mm-hmm. And working with Harrison was a very great honor, and I actually gave Harrison a Bible at the end of one of the shows.
Wow.
Because God told me in my heart one day, he goes, he's got everything, but he doesn't have me. And I can remember being in New York shooting The Devil's Own. We were up on, I think, East 82nd, up on a roof, and he was going down for the night, and I was still working, and he climbed down this ladder, and I said, good night, Harrison, God bless you. And next thing I know, his head pops back up, and he goes, thank you. I need that. And, you know, because, you know, what do you give someone that has everything?
Exactly.
You know, financially.
Wow. Yes.
But you can't have, and he's a quarter Jewish. And, you know, I never verbally just went and shared my faith with him. He saw me in my action. He knew I was in sobriety. He knew I was a Christian, mm-hmm. so he just saw me by lead by example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful expression of Christianity. Is by example.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful example. What are some of your favorite movie? Now, you worked on The Italian Job. That's an amazing movie.
That was the one where I broke my neck, unfortunately.
Oh my gosh.
That one changed my life.
Uh-huh.
See, I can't control the PTSD.
Wow.
When I think about that wreck.
I wish I would have known. I wouldn't have brought it up.
Good. No. I just, there's some days I can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is I was working on The Italian Job, which is a great movie, and I worked with Mark Wahlberg and Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
I was actually having lunch one day. I think it was the day before I got hurt, and I turned around, and Charlize was right next to me, and my heart stopped because I never paid much attention to actresses, and, you know, they're there, and I went, oh, my gosh, this lady's stunning. But, I worked on that show, and unfortunately, I had to do this jump down this stairwell. It was stairwell. It was at the corner of Hollywood and Highland. It's right by the Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Mm-hmm.
It is the entrance to the Metro Rail station. We used a live station, and when I got there on Saturday morning to do it, I saw the Mini Coopers drive down it and test it, and I asked if I could do it, and they said, oh, no, we don't have time, and I kind of just looked at them, and unfortunately, that's typical Hollywood in some things.
Mm-hmm.
They rush, even though they have all the time in the world, and anyway, I had a gentleman named Jimmy Holly with me who was an ex-Supercross champ, and I was very comfortable with the BMW cop bike, and I launched down these stairs, and the bike flew about 12, 13 feet down, and it hit, and then it bounced again. And the first time it hit, I was on both brakes, but we had disconnected the anti-lock brakes to make it more film worthy. Hmm. And what happened was, as I hit again, I was on polished concrete, and in front of me was a wall to my left, a wall to my right. I was supposed to turn out, but I was going too fast. I couldn't make the turn, and there was the camera crew.
Oh.
And about 10 feet in front of the wall, I closed my eyes and let go of the handlebars.
Wow.
And it was kind of like the Roadrunner with Wile E. Coyote. And I got spit into the wall. Head first, spit me upside down, and the motorcycle slammed into me, and then I slithered down the wall.
Wow.
And, I should have been paralyzed. I broke C5, 6, and 7, and I actually came back to work 3 hours later.
And it, no way.
That's the beautiful thing about going to doctors. I can tell you right now, Don, if you ever get hurt, a spine or back, don't go to an orthopedic surgeon, go to a neurosurgeon.
Mm-hmm.
So I got hurt like in October of 2002. They didn't fuse my neck until December 10th, 2003. And, but anyway, that's enough about that. Like I said, the good news is that, in January 12th, I'll have 29 years sober. And that's,
beautiful. Congratulations.
God in a hotel. Yeah. Well, because, you know, God had enough of me crying and whining that I needed his help. And, you know, God has his own way of dealing with us. His ways aren't our ways. And we know his time is not our timing. And it took till 10:30 on a Sunday night on January 12, 1992, for him to reach out verbally to me, audibly, and it changed my life. Mm-hmm. I have not had a drink or drug ever since. And, you
Beautiful.
Know, and that much I can give him the glory to.
Wow. So, to go from, the tragedy with your father and then the experiences, I mean, just the life-changing experiences of riding bikes and racing and then hitting the Hollywood circuit. I mean, hitting that Hollywood circuit's pretty exciting. I mean, that's an adrenaline rush in itself. And if someone wasn't grounded, they could easily get sucked up into that whole formality, right?
Well, you know, the one thing, Don, I was fortunate. I was raised a Lutheran. My godfather's a Lutheran minister, but I didn't really walk in my faith You know, I mean, I knew Jesus and God, but I didn't have any, although I went to a Christian college. I went to Azusa Pacific when it was still a college, and now it's a big university. Mm-hmm. But God was always tugging at me. I just wasn't listening, you know, and that was because I was trying to deal with the pain that was in between my ears over my dad's death, and I was just trying to turn off, you can say, I don't use demons, but turn off the voices mm-hmm. of that pain. So, but yeah, Hollywood, you know, I was fortunate when I hooked into the Hollywood, I got put in with the A-level stuntmen. I didn't go through many wrong doors. I was given some great, very famous mentors all the way along. You know, I worked on, I think, 3 or 4 Clint Eastwood movies. But I was given mentors like my friend Mike Runyard. There's a guy named Mick Rogers who was Mel Gibson's double for 25 years. I was given Alan Gibbs, who was a legend. My closest mentor was a gentleman named Bobby Bass, who was a legendary stuntman. But he also had a third career. He was one of our mercenary soldiers that we never talked about back then.
Wow.
Fought for our country. So
wow.
I was very, very fortunate to be directed with right people. And most of the time, you know, even in my days when I was trying to turn off the pain from my dad, I knew enough sense, like when I raced my motorcycles or I did stunts, you didn't want to go to work and be loaded or be drugged or anything. Mm-hmm. I had more sense than that. God
that's
gave
good.
Me that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's just
it's, him. It's wisdom.
You know, I think he was protecting me because he knew one day when I was 52 years old, I was going to become a parent, and at 53, become a parent again. And, you know, now my daughter sets, she's 13, and she's already the national champ last year of 12-year-old girls in America. She's national number 2 to the 11, 12-year-old girl. Now this year, she has a chance for the national title. We leave Monday for Tulsa, Oklahoma. She just, my son is the better athlete, but my daughter has the it.
And, wow. Congratulations, Dad. I mean, how cool is that?
You know, that's one good thing about being able to not work anymore. You know, we're not rich on the pension they gave me, but I've been able to been here every day for my kids, to take them places that I never got to go to when I was a young man, and to get into the sport that I never knew anything about. It's called bicycle motocross, and it's huge. And, you know, like I said, I'm just fortunate. Like this year, my daughter's won 36 national events. My son is called Gold Cup 2. Both kids are state champions in Georgia now. You know, we've been in Georgia for about, we moved here last June. So since 2019, we've been in Georgia now, relocated from Southern California. And so we're trying to, you know, I'm just fortunate. Even on days when I don't want to feel so fortunate, I realize that I'm a parent. To 2 kids that even though the PTSD gets in the way some days, too often, that they're going to know they had a dad that was there for them.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. So, you know, what's so cool, John, is that, you know, starting off, you had this ability, God-gifted talent, the behavior.
Yeah, sure was.
The behavior to be able to, I mean, because to ride a bike, I mean, I've ridden a lot of bikes, you know, when I got older off the farm, you know, but it takes a certain person to be able to have the timing and the balance and the ability to move at a certain time, because if you don't, it's very, very critical. And so you had that natural gifting, and now look that you've got, you know, 2 children that have been, you know, birthed by this same talent, and with your experience, how you can coach them and just love on them and direct them. It's beautiful.
Well, the greatest thing about them is my son's 14 and a half. My daughter's 13. When they were probably 5 or 6, maybe. Yeah, right about there. We were coming down the street one day from a town called Arcadia in Southern California.
Yeah, I know it very well.
Yeah, and I was just sharing with them. Yeah, we were coming down Santa Anita from the racetrack. We had been at the mall doing something, and
fun.
I was sharing with them about Jesus in their heart, and they actually had me pull over the expedition, and they both asked Jesus into their heart.
Wow.
They were like 5 or 6 years old, and they both they both very much like my daughter's Instagram. It says God first. My son, who is really the gifted one, he will tell you that the Holy Spirit came to him when he was in his mother's womb. It's almost scary in that aspect of how God touches people's lives, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And but that is the biggest gift of all, is that they both love Jesus and share Jesus in their faith, even at their young age, to a lot of people.
Wow, that is beautiful. You know what's so interesting, John, is that from the world's perspective, you know, God is not cool, right? You know, it's stuff. You know, it's activities, it's where you live, it's what you have in the house, it's what you drive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And God just isn't cool. But when you take all that stuff away and the real life hits, you just can't do it without God.
No, and that, unfortunately, as you know, as you're seeing in our country right now, power and greed change how you think.
Yes,
it's Satan's tool, I believe, to change people's lives and hearts. They come enamored with the power and greed. I mean, I worked on $100 million movies. I worked with the $20 million actors. I worked mm-hmm. with the $20 million directors. I worked with Alan Pakula, and they go on with Clint. Now Clint was awesome, but I've worked with some. I won't mention his name, but a mm-hmm. director in one of Harrison's movies, mm-hmm. he had the coldest black eyes I've ever seen. There was nothing in his spirit. You could just tell.
Wow.
And it was the only time ever in my entire life I wanted to leave a movie. I wanted to leave by the second week. It was not, and I got more spiritually attacked on that movie than I ever had in my life. And mm-hmm. so it was, you know, you know, as we know, Hollywood is very much sold out to whatever pleases the flesh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, if it makes them money, they sell it. It's not more simple than that. And, mm-hmm. you know, being here in Georgia, you get to be blessed because I've got to meet Dan Cathy a couple of times who owns Pinewood. Now it's called Trilla Studios, and he's very much involved. But when you meet someone like that who's got more money than any of these actors could ever think of put together, but it's very humble.
Mm-hmm.
It really opens your eyes up. You know?
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it is. It's just amazing. It's like, wow, you know, I just met a guy and my daughter said, I remember meeting him the last time. He was in shorts and a hat and a polo shirt and tennis shoes. And he said, hey, I'm Dan Cathy. I said, oh, you're the guy and what I said to him was, oh, you're the guy that picks up the trash at your stores. Because my friend Eddie Matthews has been with him before, and he says, the guy's amazing. He cleans up, and I'm like going, here's a guy worth like $8.7 billion and can be that humble to pick up trash in one of his own stores.
What character.
You know.
What character.
Yeah, and so that is what the world should be looking at instead of these people on the screen, you know, mm-hmm. and so forth. And it's too bad we can't get more great big Christian movies out there, but you know, we know the Prince and Pa of the Airways does not want any part of that.
Right, right. So if, like, I know a young guy, I believe he's somewhere in Georgia. His desire is to be a stuntman. What would you tell younger people today, John? You know, you've been there, you've done that, you've, you know, an amazing story, amazing historic memoirs that you have. What would you tell someone that was inspired to be a stuntman or stuntwoman for that matter?
Well, yeah. And my daughter would be an amazing stuntwoman. Unfortunately, she doesn't want to, she gets tired of seeing how daddy hurts some days physically. And
uh-huh.
she goes, I don't want any part of it. But, you know, I tell people to follow their heart, you know, and for me, like I said, I am solid proof that even when I wasn't walking with Jesus, Jesus had his hand on me, because I could have died three or four times doing stunts before I mm-hmm. came back to Jesus.
Wow.
There were some big things. But I would just tell someone to, first off, learn as much as they can about Hollywood or the film business, because it's not nice. It's all about self.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about what you can do for me. And then practice their skills. Don't compromise who you are inside your heart for anybody.
That's good.
You know, to get ahead. And that mm-hmm. is probably one of the biggest things, is don't compromise. Be yourself And if you really walk with God and God wants you in that business, he's going to open the doors. I have some amazing stuntman friends. We used to have a big Bible study, and one of them doubled Arnold for Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. One was Monty Perlman. My buddy Mark Donaldson doubled Stallone for 25 years. Huh. My friend Philip Tan is one of the top Asian stuntmen, and now his son Louis is the new star of Mortal Kombat. And then there's David Lee, and my friend Rex Pearson used to double the Hulk. But there's some very spirit-filled stuntmen out there that actually used to drag me out to see Kim Clement, the Prophet, because he was based out of Northridge, California. Mm-hmm. But I would just tell someone to learn as much as they can learn. You can't make a door open that's not supposed to open. You know, mm-hmm. Don't sell yourself short. And don't ever do anything that you know you can't do more than once. And don't volunteer for anything. Because unfortunately, which I learned, there's some stunt coordinators out there that will hurt you. Mm-hmm. They don't mean to hurt you intentionally. Mm-hmm. They just want certain shots done.
Good point.
You just have to be wiser than that. But you know, you have to follow your heart. You know, and if your heart tells you that's going to be, and then get ready. It takes about 7 to 8 years to get established, at least in California. Mm-hmm. And the doors just don't open. Here's probably my biggest thing: if you cannot take the word no. Mm-hmm. You can't take rejection, then don't make an attempt at it. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to be a lot of rejection and a lot of no's.
Well, that's good advice.
That's just something, like I said, if you're not good at people telling you no, then don't go be a stuntman or stuntwoman. Mm-hmm. Because it just is what it is, you know. And it's sad, but it's, I'll say this very clearly, it always isn't the one with the most talent that gets the most fame. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be in the right place at the right time. You can work for a certain second unit director or coordinator, and you can do a good job. Mm-hmm. And that person can take a liking to you and could change your whole life.
Mm-hmm. So I've got another question for you. This is what I ask athletes, you know, and when they're retired and they're sitting on the couch Sunday afternoon or maybe a Saturday and they're watching the big game. And they remember when they were in that game and they were part of that action. And it's kind of like it just all comes back. What does it feel like to you, John, when you're watching a movie and, you know, you're familiar with maybe the stunts or you're familiar with the director, the other actors, or the theme of what's happening? Do you like relive some of that adrenaline, or how does it feel?
Well, let's say for the first 5 years when I walked away, I would cry every time I'd go to a movie.
Wow.
Because my heart hadn't surrendered yet.
Uh-huh.
And, part of me would love to go back to work. I would have to do car work now. I don't think my body could take the pounding that it used to take. But it's hard some days to watch films and see all your friends still working. Mm-hmm. And know that you can't cross over there anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's very humbling. It also sometimes might become irritating. Mm-hmm. But in your heart, man, I can do this. Mm-hmm. But then God tells your body, no, I don't think I think your body's been hammered enough.
Yeah. And,
but there are plenty of times when I watch a film that I would like to, I watch the stunts and watch how they're done. I'm amazed at the talent level. You were talking about me being talented. I have learned over the last 30 years that every 10 years, the talent level goes to another level.
Wow.
You see it in the extreme sports. You see it in the X Games. Mm-hmm. Talent God just moves people to another level. I mean, I would be like terrible today compared to how these kids ride motorcycles today. The things even the women can do. We're fortunate. We have a friend. Her name is Debbie Evans. She is the queen of automobile stunts. She doubles She's done every single Fast and Furious. She did the Matrix on the She doubles every single star.
Incredible.
Female in Hollywood because she's a Christian lady. Her husband Lane's a friend of mine, I don't know if I'm as bad, if we're as bad as football players wanting to play, but I do know that I would like to get back in. And every now and then, I like to just to get in and slide a car and go, wow, I did that car slide and go home, you know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I'd want to be the guy getting hit by the fender of the car and flying over the top of the car. I don't think my body would like that one anymore.
Yeah.
That's why youth is such a thing, because when you're young,
you don't think about,
you know, what it's going to feel like in 25 years, you know, especially for me. I was fortunate. I came in when there were still real life cowboys working. I came in the mid 80s. So the cowboys who really started the business were still very big. I was very fortunate. I had a legendary stuntman named Bill Hart mentor me. And this guy was just one of the most top stuntmen at the time, said, there's a real stuntman. These guys used to crash their horses and all they would do is dig up the dirt. They didn't have all the sophisticated padding and the wire work.
Amazing
stuff. They just did real live practical stunts.
Mm-hmm. You know what you're talking about here is the substance of greatness. And what I love is that, you know, I changed the podcast over to Sound Behavior, How Celebrities Are Born, because I kept talking with people and hearing their stories and always learning something so profound of things that, you know, we go so fast in life, John, that we miss a lot of the value of what other people have accomplished and done. And, and just to hear you about your mentors and the places and stuff, it's just, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, that nobody can take away from you.
Well, you know, I will say this. I was never the greatest stuntman, and I don't even know how good I was. I was blessed to be able to do what I had to do. I learned very young, Don, not like I said a little earlier, I was learned very young not to raise your hand and volunteer for anything, and not to do something that you can't do more than once. And that was probably one of the key takeaways that I caught. I didn't catch a few other things, but you know, that was one of the key takeaways that I took. But my greatest accolade, I think, was there's a thing called Day in the Dirt, and it's very famous now. It's by Red Bull. It's a big Grand Prix race that the stuntmen started back in the 90s, the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And I was involved in doing it, and I was riding for the Stuntmen Association. And I remember one day I was in the pits, and I was acting like I was taking some Stuntmen Association merchandise. And one of the stunt guys, his name's Harry Wachek, he looked at me and said, "John Alden, Mr. Integrity? I don't think so." And that was the greatest compliment I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
The man called me a thing of integrity. And see, that reflects on the Jesus in me, even though I wasn't, may have not been the best witness, although I was walking then much differently than I did prior. Uh-huh. That is a testimony to him, not to me.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, your story is incredible. I mean, just in that one of the last emails, you know, I've had a bunch of stuff. You know, I've had third-degree burn and back surgery and you know, some you know, I had the rotator cuff operation. But when you said you've had what, five rotator cuff operations?
Five, three on the right, two on the left, and 30 dislocated right shoulders.
Unbelievable. I can't, you know, I got that email and I go, what? You know, I was like blown away.
Yeah, and it got to be a joke back about 2017, 2018. I couldn't keep my shoulders in. I would sneeze and I'd try to go swimming at the beach with my kids and let alone try to ride my motocross bike. I haven't been on my bike in 3 years because of that. But the last two surgeries failed. Like the first day back, they both, it just, whatever happened didn't happen. But, you know, I was burnt too. I can't even imagine burns. I was fortunate. I was really burnt really good on Clear and Present Danger. It's actually in the movie. It's when they back, when Harrison is in the kill zone sequence and they're trying to kill everybody and he backs his Suburban through a building to get away. If you slow it down, I'm driving the car and the whole bomb went off inside of the car because the door was off and it totally engulfed me.
Oh my
and,
gosh.
And it was in Mexico City, so we didn't have too many big medics. But the saddest thing was, 45 minutes later, they said, "Can we do it again?" And this time I had gelled up with special fire gel and stuff. But this time again, one more time, the effects guy pushed the button too soon and engulfed me again. And this time it lit my face off and everything. And I actually...
Oh,
my
John.
Brain said this time you're trying to kill me. And I jumped out of the Suburban and chased him because it was no longer, okay, you made a mistake.
Uh-huh.
It was like, wow. But they had to fly me home to California to have a special wig made because it did that much damage to my hair. And thank God, it was like I got a laser pill, you know. I was fortunate that I didn't need any surgery or anything.
Oh, my gosh.
So my heart goes out for you for being burnt. Nasty, man.
Oh, it's nasty. I had the skin grafting, and they were talking amputation, but praise God that the skin grafting took, and I had to learn how to walk again. And when you're a 12-year-old kid, learning how to walk is pretty painful, but I can't imagine being in that car and having the heat from that. Unless anybody's ever been burned before, you don't know the exhaust of what the fumes, right? The fumes from that explosion is just incredible.
And the thing with fire is, to me, is that fire just wraps itself around you, and it seems like it has you forever, even though it could be for seconds.
Yep.
And you don't know to the extent. I had a friend, it sounds like, he was 18, and he got burnt from his waist down. He was inside of a van working on it. And for some reason, they had the distributor, the engine cover off, and they turned the motor over, and it sparked, and it fully engulfed him.
Oh,
he's got some nasty scars this day, but they threw him into a swimming pool, which saved his life. But and he's a great athlete. He's one of my best, oldest brothers. But I just commend anybody that's been burnt. That just seems to me to be like the hardest thing to deal with. And because I've had a skin graft on my leg, but to go with that, I commend you, Don. I mean, shoulder, you just pop the shoulder back in and you go again. You know? But most people don't have my mentality. You know? It's like my daughter, she had a nasty crash last Saturday. And I mean, so bad, it violently ripped her helmet, destroyed her helmet, threw her head first and shoulder first into the concrete corner, asphalt corner, and she bounces right back up.
Oh, gosh.
And this is a week before this is a week ago tomorrow it happened, and we found out she had some deep tissue damage. So instantly, I anointed her with oil. I prayed over her. We started putting Arnica gel, and she rode last night like nothing happened. But, you know.
Well, she's definitely your daughter, John.
Well, she is on that aspect. She's a lot of her mommy, too, but she does have like 2 months ago, we were in Louisville, Kentucky. They had a national called the Derby City National, and the world champ from Columbia flew in to race, and she showed up. And so it was a 3-day race. Well, the first day she crashed my daughter out. She sent her up and over this hill and down the side of this berm. And my daughter, instead of crashing, she crashes and gets right back up and runs on the track. And then the next 2 days gets so mad, she beats the world champ out of Columbia. It's just comical. But like I said, my son is the one is going to be the one that touched many lives. He's got such a compassion, not even for sports, but for Jesus. And that's where the gifting comes in.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we could talk for a long time. Yeah. I've been enjoying, you know, our correspondence via email, and I've been looking forward to, you know, having this conversation. And I know from doing the radio show that we had is that you just never know what you're going to say that's going to touch someone in a way that will change their life. And so, John, you know, to have you as a special guest today, I'm just so honored. And it's just been, you've inspired me. You really have. And so, you know,
you
I just...
You inspired me. You called me, you know, and it's all about... I learned something very early on, Don, that when I first got sober, when I heard the voice of God in the hotel room, the voice of God didn't tell me that he was going to deliver me instantly. The voice of God said, you will not pick up the phone again after 11 o'clock tonight for drugs and alcohol. And then the voice stopped, and 2 seconds later, the voice started and said, but you will go back to Alcoholics Anonymous for me. And I really dug into AA for many years until I got back my relationship with Jesus as I needed to be, and putting him and all the things he's done for me. But in AA, I learned about giving back. You've got to be willing to give back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's brilliant.
That's the same with our faith. People don't understand it. Why do you preach your faith? Well, we're trying to save you from torment in hell. They don't want to hear that, you know? And so I just think for me, it's just part like at BMX.
Yeah.
I'm helping every kid I can, every family. I try to talk to them, encourage them.
Yeah,
one
that's
of the
beautiful.
6-year-old kids. Yeah, you just try to give back, man. Give a little bit about life, and you don't got to preach it to everybody. And
no.
Unfortunately, some people are like, oh, you're Stuntman John. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm also a child of God, you know.
Yeah. So
I was gonna
close it. I'm gonna interrupt you there. I was gonna close it, but you know, something when you were talking, something prompted me, and I have to ask you this question if you've got just another couple minutes. Is that
I got tons of minutes.
You thank you. You mentioned a couple times, you know, about that night in the hotel room. What happened? Yeah, and if it's none of my business, correct me, okay, and just stop me. But you went to this hotel room, and something must have happened for you to just accept Christ.
Well, like I said, I was raised a Lutheran. I used to do prayer and demand, and that prayer was, God, if you get me out of this one, I promise I won't do it again until tomorrow. And I don't say that lightly, but I think a lot of people have done that prayer.
Sure.
But this was during my 18-month run when I walked away from the film business. I was trying to turn off the pain in my brain and my heart, and I went to a hotel room, and my family had done tough love. They had parked me. They had done what they needed to do to try to help me, and it wasn't working. And so I was in this hotel room trying to find some drug dealers to buy some cocaine to snort, as that became my drug of choice over alcohol the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it was 10:30, January 12th, and all of a sudden, Don, the hotel room went still, like you just walked onto a sound stage with no one on it. And I heard the audible voice of God. And I will tell you this, when the audible voice of God speaks, you can be an atheist or agnostic, you know the voice. And the voice was in my ears, not in my heart. It was very clear. The voice said this: you will not pick up your phone again after 11 o'clock tonight for drugs or alcohol. I had enough time to look at the clock, Don. The clock said 10:30. I had this thought: man, you got a sense of humor. And instantly, the same voice started and said, but you will go back to Alcoholics Anonymous for me. Being the drug addict I was at the time, I dialed from 10:30 to 11 to find my dealers, couldn't find them. Hung up the phone at 9 in the morning. I called my mom. I said, Mom, can I come home? Something happened. And that'll be 29 years this January 12th. And that same voice, Don, came back to me just before I got Harrison Ford. I was coming down the Ventura Freeway, just crossed out of Burbank, down to 134, got into Buck Glendale, and my expedition went completely quiet. And the voice said something about a girlfriend, and then the voice said, but your career will come back tenfold in my timing. And it wasn't weeks later when I got the call to double Harrison Ford.
Wow.
So I went from not working to doubling the number one box office star in the world.
That's incredible.
Thank God, my friend.
Well, we do. And what a way to wind down just a wonderful phone call with a brand new friend. This has been rich. Why don't you stand the phone while I close it up, and I just want to say thanks again, but off air. So this concludes another episode, and if you haven't, please consider subscribing, because I have amazing lists of future guests, and you can tell by having John Alden for episode 32 that this was really a special, special time. So I want to thank you for joining us, and remember, slow down. You can learn so much about the stories of how celebrities are born and the journeys of everyday people. Thank you.
You've been listening to Don Crosby and your Sound Behavior Podcast, sponsored by Perfection.us and Global Behavior. If you would like to become a special guest, get a copy of Don's book, or simply share Sound Behavior on social media, go to soundbehavior.com. That's soundbehavior.com.